Welcome everybody, and first of all, I want to thank the organizers for inviting me here to give this presentation. And what I will tell you about is our activity in Florence on a single photon level light and manipulation amplification. Okay, let me start with an outline of what I'm going to tell you. So essentially what I'm going to tell you is how we can manipulate essentially single photons, how we can add and subtract single photons from some arbitrary states of light, how we can implement sequences and superposition of these very basic single photon operations, and how we can measure light at this quantum level. So putting everything together, what we do in the end is essentially we can directly probe some fundamental quantum rules. And in particular, I will tell you about some noiseless amplification. And finally, I want to change a bit subject. The last part of my talk will be about the investigation of the mode structure of ultra-short pulsed quantum light states. So we have to start with motivation, why we do it. And my main motivation for doing this kind of stuff is because it's fun. And essentially, I started doing quantum optics relatively recently, and I've always been I always saw a big, let's say, difference from what you learn in the books and what you do in the lab. And so I mean, it was fun trying to really implement some of these basic let's say quantum mechanical entities and effects in a real experiment in the lab. And so these are some of the things that we directly implemented in an experiment. And was really, I mean, for me, that was the most interesting part of of our work. For example, just doing, I mean, seeing how these A and the A-DAG operators work, and directly seeing what the commutation relation means in a very direct and, let's say, physical way. And so that's the main motivation for our work. And then, I mean, what we do, it can also be useful, and this tools can be used together or in some particular combinations for probably quantum technologies in the future. Can you still hear me? Okay. So the basic ingredient of our work is the generation of single photons. And okay, I don't need to explain too much. It's based on parametric spontaneous parametric down conversion in a nonlinear crystal. And we just convert a single high frequency photon into a pair of lower frequency photons. And because of energy and momentum conservation, whenever we see a single photon on, let's say, one of two output modes, we know that there is another single photon on the other side. And if we are able to essentially filter the frequency, you know, let's say, in frequency and space, one of the two photons, then the, let's say, shape of the other photon on the other side is well defined, and so we can use it and we can measure it and we can do whatever we want with it. So the simple, the basic scheme to generate and detect single photons in our lab is something like this. So we start with a modlock pulsed laser. Usually we use a picosecond one, and most of its emission is frequency doubled in a linear crystal and is used as a pump for the parametric down conversion process. So we, one of the two let's say outputs of a parametric process is used as a heralding signal, and when this detector clicks, we know that there is a single photon on the other side, and then we open this a gate in this homodyne detector. So this is a sort of a movie of what's going on. We have local oscillator pulses coming from the laser arriving all the time. Oops, no, sorry, I will start again. I don't know what happened. Appeared. So let's try. So we have these local oscillator pulses coming all the time, and only when there is one trigger pulse arriving from this detector, we open the gate in our homodyne detection scheme and take a measurement of the quadrature of this field. So after a while, we collect some homodyne data, something like that, and with this data, we reconstruct Wigner functions of our states. So this is our basic, let's say, scheme for our generation of single photons and measurements of single photons. After that, we just implemented addition of single photons to any arbitrary state. The scheme is very similar. We just add, instead of starting from vacuum, from spontaneous parametric downconversion, we start from, we inject some light in the signal field, in the signal mode, sorry. And now, whenever this detector clicks, we know that on the other side, we have the result of application of the ADAC operator to the input state. And this is a very faithful implementation of this creation operator. If you have a small parametric gain, which is always the case in our experiments, and small photon numbers to start with. So this is the scheme of experiment. Can we just switch off some lights? Because I think this is very dark. Anyway. Oh, okay. So this is the scheme of experiment. And now, compared to the previous scheme, we also have this additional channel here, which is the input for our parametric downconversion. So again, we see a click here, and we measure the state of the homodyne detector here. And we can also perform a single photon subtraction, so implement the photon annihilation operator, which is, let's say, simpler from a conceptual point of view. We just use a beam splitter with a low reflectivity, and we look for clicks in this detector. If reflectivity is low enough, and we start with small photon numbers in the input state, then this process is a faithful implementation of the photon annihilation operator. And the scheme we used is the following. So we use, we can have a variable reflectivity beam splitter by using a polarizing one and a wave plate. And again, when we say click in the detector, we implement the A operator on the state, on the input state. So we use these basic, let's say, schemes for many different experiments. For example, with this one, by applying this one to any arbitrary state, you always transform any classical state into a non-classical one. And the degree of non-classical behavior of the final state just depends on the, let's say, mean number of photons in the input state. So with this operator, we can produce states with an adjustable degree of non-classicality. And so you can use them, for example, to test non-classicality criteria, and so on. And with this one, what we did, you can use this one to degaussify Gaussian states, which has been used for generating Schrödinger cats from squeezed states. And, we used that also to test the invariance of coherent state to photon, to single photon annihilation, which is essentially the definition of coherent states. And we used that to prove some strange behavior of a photon subtraction when you apply it to, for example, thermal states. So this is already very interesting, but you can also do something more. So you can take two of these boxes. Now we can just have a scheme where one of these operators is just a box with a sort of trigger channel and combine them together in such a scheme, for example. So this is particularly interesting because instead of just looking at single, let's say, clicks from these boxes, we can look at coincidences. And depending on the boxes which clip, you can implement different sequences of operators. So for example, in this case, if with these two click, you can implement the ADAG A sequence. Or if these two click, you can implement the A ADAG sequence. And so this is what we did in the lab already some years ago now. And you see, this is a subtraction stage. This is a creation, photon addition stage. And this is another subtraction stage. And now, depending on the sequence of clicks, now these two or these two, you can implement AADAG or ADAG A. And so if you send the same state of light in, you can just look at the state that comes out. And if the two final states are different, you directly prove that A and the AADAG do not commute. So this is one application. But you can also, and it looks quite different in the lab, of course. What else can we do with this kind of sequences? Well, what we can do is, for example, apply this particular sequence of first a creation and then a subtraction of a single photon to a weak coherent state. So if it's a weak coherent state, you can just approximate it with the first two terms in the Fox expansion. So if you apply this sequence to this coherent state, what you get is the following. So the first creation operation just raises by one the photon number here, and puts a square root of two factor here. And the next annihilation operator just brings these two back again, so to 0 and 1, with another square root of 2 here. So in the final, the result is that if you start from alpha, you get something which is similar to 2 alpha. So what you get is an amplification of your input coherent state. And you amplify the amplitude of the coherent state by a factor of 2. So why is it interesting? So this is a phase-insensitive noiseless amplifier. And suppose we have a set of coherent states, and you use these coherent states to encode some information, or you use just a coherent state to measure to encode the phase, which is a result of some particular measurement. And as long as the amplitude of the states is large enough, of course, they are well separated and everything is fine. But if you have, for example, losses in your channels, then the amplitude can decrease, and then you lose the distinguishability between these states. So you lose the distinguishability between, for example, the letters in your alphabet. And then you also increase the uncertainty in the phase determination from this state. So the ideal, what we would like to do is to reverse this process and bring these two states back to this situation. And this is exactly what a noiseless amplifier would do. So just take the states and essentially just translate them without changing their shape. But of course, this kind of process is not allowed in quantum mechanics, because if it was possible, then it would allow you to clone quantum states to beat the Heisenberg uncertainty and so on. So this is not allowed in a deterministic way. So whenever you try to deterministically amplify a coherent state, what you always do, you always amplify also the initial quantum noise. And furthermore, you add some extra noise just due to amplification. And so you always essentially lose by amplification, by deterministic amplification. But what you can do is some non-deterministic amplification, and this is possible, which means that you can, just amplify in a perfect way your state only in a fraction of the times, and most of the time your system can do something else, something completely wrong. But if you are able to just to know when it works, then you can just do a perfect amplified copies of your state. And this is what we can do with this sequence of a creation and negation operator. This non-deterministic noiseless amplification was first proposed by Ralph and Lund a couple of years ago, and their scheme was based on quantum scissors. I'm not going to discuss about this, but the idea is that you start from a weak coherent state, and essentially what you can produce is just a superposition of a 0 and 1, where the coefficient for the one single photon fact term is amplified depending on the reflectivity of the beam splitters in this setup. But the problem is that, of course, you just truncate your initial coherent state to the first term. So this works well, in principle, only if this amplification factor is much smaller than 1, so for just for very weak coherent states. And in fact, the proposal just proposed to use many of these stages in a sort of a complex interferometric setup to start from a large state, break it into very small coherent states, amplify each of them, and then recombine them. Of course, this is impossible to do, essentially, in an experiment. And so people tried to do this first step, just only this first step. And last year, two groups succeeded in this experiment, and they essentially they just performed this first step of noiseless amplification. And the group of Philippe Granger in France really performed a full tomographic reconstruction of the final amplified states. And what you can see immediately is that the amplifier works well, but only for very low amplitudes. Already when the amplitude of the coherent field is just something like 0.5, the final state is very different from the coherent state. So this works well, but only if you can just approximate your coherent state as a superposition of 0 and 1. And also last year, another paper appeared about another proposal for noiseless amplification, which was based on the addition of noise, thermal noise, and then photon subtraction. And also in this case, they were mainly interested in the improving the determination of the phase. So they demonstrated that this scheme work for improving the phase determination, but it's really not a very faithful or high fidelity amplifier for the state, because as you see, increased amplification and the final state is completely different from an equivalent one. In our case, this is the scheme for our noiseless amplifier, which is just a sequence of photon creation and photon subtraction, and with a coherent state as the input. So the result is something like this. So this is a Wigner function reconstructions from experimental data of a coherent state amplified after amplification. And this is the amplitude of the initial coherent state. And you see that this is more or less the situation where in the quantum system scheme you had almost something which was completely distorted. Here it's a very round one. And it's also quite round also in this case where alpha is relatively large. So this scheme is, that's why we call it high fidelity, because it's essentially can amplify coherent states of light with higher fidelity than other schemes at the moment. So for example, you can just look at the amplitude gain of our system and compare to the other scheme based on quantum scissors, and you see that it's much better, because also the other scheme is no longer an amplifier already when the amplitude is larger than 0.5. So the gain goes below one. And fidelity, which is essentially how our final state is different, how much our final state is different from to the state that we would like, so a coherent state of double amplitude. And so our fidelity is almost one also, I mean, up to 0.5, and then it goes down, but much more slowly than in the other case. And you can also look at noise, how much noise you add in this process. And also in this case, you see that, well, one of the two quadratures of the final state is really getting a bit squeezed, and the other one is some additional noise. But this is much better than the, let's say, best deterministic amplifier that you can conceive. So this sequence is essentially implementing a fixed gain noiseless amplifier with a gain of 2. But this is just a particular case of a more general situation where you have an amplifier of variable gain. And in order to implement this, what one would need is a coherent superposition of these two sequences of operations. And then if you just change the weight of the superposition, you can change the gain of the amplifier. So in order to implement this, we need some coherent superposition of quantum operators. Now, all our operators are conditional operations, are done this way. We have some box with some herald signal coming out. And these herald signals are really just herald light modes, and we have some single photon detectors at the end. So a simple way to implement superposition of these conditional operations is to superpose the herald mode of more of these boxes. So this is the kind of scheme that we can use. So if when we have two or more of these boxes, we can just superpose the herald modes on a beam splitter, and then after the beam splitter, we can, if we put a detector here, it essentially doesn't, well, the beam splitter can erase the information about the origin of a click. And so when you see a click here, it can be originated from this one or from this one, so you can have a variable reflectivity here, you can add some variable phase. So in general, what you can do is you can implement this arbitrary superposition of these conditional operations. And once you add this and you send some light, state of light in, what you can get is some arbitrary superposition of states. So let's see how we can do what we wanted to do. So we start from the scheme that I showed you before, the sequence of annihilation, creation, annihilation again. And then we modify it this way. So we just take the outputs of the two annihilation stages, which are just the two beam splitters, and we mix them on another beam splitter. And then we look at coincidences from this detector and this one. So when we see a click at coincidence, we know that there was a photon addition for sure, and there was for sure a photon subtraction, but we don't know if a photon subtraction was before or after the photon addition. So in general, if this is a variable beam splitter and this is a variable phase, you can implement this arbitrary superposition of these two sequences, which is very nice, and we can do what we want, the variable gain amplifier. But but we can also do something else. If this is a 50% mean splitter, then the superposition reduces to something like this, with just this phase. And if a phase is set equal to zero, then this is exactly, we can exactly implement the commutator of A and A DAG. And what we know from textbooks is that this commutator should be equal to the identity. And so if everything works as it should, if we set up all this experiment and set the phase right and set the beam splitter reflectivity right, then all this big setup should do essentially nothing to the state. You send some light in and the same state of light should come out, because this is just equivalent to the identity. And indeed, we performed the experiment and it worked. We started with some thermal states of light and just essentially verified that the commutator doesn't change the state. Okay. In this case, if we want to implement the variable gain amplifier, what we need to do is, well, something similar. Now we have to send some Korean light in, and this is the scheme that we have to use. So there is a first, let's say, annihilation stage, then a first, photon creation stage, and then another annihilation stage. And we can just superpose the trigger error modes of, from the two subtractions on a single mode fiber with, let's say, a variable phase somewhere, and a 50% beam splitter, fiber beam splitter, and look at coincidence between this detector here and this detector here. And of course, we have to set the right weights for the two parts of the superposition, and we do this by just adjusting the angle of these two weight plates. So by just changing these two angles, we can have a variable gain amplifier with really variable gain, essentially. Okay, and just note that from the experimental point of view, this is not so simple, because we have, this takes an optical table, and there are two large interferometers involved, essentially. One is this large one, which is used for homodyne detection. We have to keep the phase stable between this coherent state here and the local oscillator. And the other one is here, and we also have to keep this phase stable in order to have the right superposition of the operators with the right phase. So from the experimental point of view, it's not so simple, but it works. And so these are the kinds of results that we obtain. So we can look at some particular cases. For example, G equal to 1, so gain 1, and an amplifier with gain 1 does nothing to the state. And indeed, if G is equal to 1, this is 1 minus 2 minus 1. So this is goes back to the commutator between A and A DAG. And this is the final state, and we can show that it's exactly the same as the input state. Then the gain G equal to 2 is what I showed you before, and we can look at G equal to 3, and if we set G equal to 3, it's 3 minus 2 is 1, and so we can implement the anti-commutator between A and A DAG. And, the result is this one. So it doesn't work so well as an amplifier, because now the gain is very large. And, I mean, if it was perfect, you would increase the intensity of this coherent state by a factor of 9. And, of course, now you really start to see very strong distortions, because our, let's say, approach is just an approximation of a perfect amplifier. So it doesn't work so well as an amplifier, but you can really see that essentially this is exactly what we expect for the final state. Okay, so let's move on to the last part, which is very different from what I told you before. So everything we have done so far, essentially, it was implicit in what I said, but everything is performed in a single, well-defined spatial-temporal mode. And so when you create states and perform operations on them, I mean, you can really see the peculiar quantum features that you can generate only if you access the right mode. What does it mean? So you have to essentially, I will tell you about this later. Let's talk about single photons. So a single photon is a single quantized excitation of a particular spatial temporal mode. So talk about the shape of a single photon means talking about the shape of a spatial temporal mode that you're considering. And for example, that of course there are different kinds of shapes. If you're talking about a cavity in cavity QED, then the mode shape will be a confined one, and so your photon will have some, let's say, confined structure, confined shape. If you're talking about a monochromatic wave, it will be with a very single, well-defined wavelength. Your single photon will be essentially infinitely extended, and will have this sort of expression. What we are dealing with is something different. It's a traveling wave packet mode, and so the mode that we are considering is essentially a Korean superposition of many monochromatic modes, and the single photon that we create is a single excitation of a particular traveling wave packet mode. And normally, what we always do is to consider that this mode is a very well, let's say, behaving Fourier transform Gaussian pulses, Fourier transform limited Gaussian pulse. But in general, it can be something else. So let's go back to the measurement of our single photon wave packets. So this is the scheme that I show you at the beginning. And normally, when we perform homotime detection, it only works well if the local oscillator is exactly matched to the mode of a single photon that you generate. So normally what we do is we just limit ourselves to some special mode matching of our local oscillator mode. So we just use a set of lenses to exactly match the spatial shape of our local oscillator to the spatial shape of our single photon. But this is not always the case, because especially if you're dealing with very short wave packets, then, well, there could be distortion of a spectral and, let's say, temporal shape of your pulse, of your single photon pulse, I would say, as it propagates. And then you could also have modulation in the pump and so on. So in principle, let's suppose that, for example, you have a very short single photon wave packet which travels along some dispersive medium, then at the end it will be, let's say, elongated in time. And if you try to measure it with a local oscillator which is a short Fourier transform limited pulse, then you will not be able to see it, or you will just see a very small portion of it with very low efficiency. So what you need to do in this case is to also add some temporal mode matching or spectral mode matching to your local oscillator to adapt to the shape of a single photon that you produce. So how can you do this? And the idea is to use a pulse shaper, which is something that people in ultrafast laser science use very often now. And the idea is that you can essentially access all the different wavelength components of your pulse with independently, and you can set the phase and amplitude of each component in an independent way. So for example, in this case, you start from a very short pulse where all wavelengths essentially arrive at the same time, and what you can do is to give different delays to different wavelengths, and you can also different amplitudes to the different wavelength components, and so you end up with a pulse which is shaped in time. Okay, and the way we do it, well, the way people do it is just by taking a grating, so dispersing the spectral components of the pulse spatially, then use a spatial modulator, which is normally a liquid crystal modulator made of many pixels, and then recombine it in a single beam. So what we do is to use something like this. We exactly use this device, which has 128 pixels, so we can essentially divide the spectrum of our pulse in 128 portions, and we can independently control the amplitude and phase of each of these, let's say, wavelength components. So what can we do with this one? So for example, suppose we have a well-known modulation of your single photon pulse. Then what you can do is just apply the right modulation to your local oscillator. And for example, you just take homotime data, reconstruct the single photon, calculate the efficiency, and then you can use this value to adjust and to improve the shape of your local oscillator. And the nice thing about this is that you don't need to really know the shape of your single photon. You could, your single photon could be in a mode which is completely crazy, and you can just use some genetic algorithm to just let the system find the best shape for a local oscillator which best matches your single photon. So what we do, the idea is the following. So we just, as I told you, this mask has 128 pixels that you can control by a voltage. So each value, the value of the voltage of each pixel is a sort of an array of numbers. And what you can do is you can just generate, let's say, 100 different random arrays. And you can essentially just modulate the local oscillator with these random individuals. And each of these arrays is a sort of DNA, and each of the pixels, of the value of each, of voltage of each of the pixels is a sort of a gene in the DNA. So what you can do is you create a first pool of individuals, a random pool, and you can just use them to just measure your single photon. Then most of them will be just nothing. We'll have crazy shapes, and so we'll give you essentially no, you will not be able to measure your single photon with these pulses. But some of them will perform better than the others. So let's say you start from 100 individuals, and then you take the 10 best individuals, and some of them can be just cloned, passed to the next generation. Some of them can perform, can undergo some mutations, so you can randomly change the value of these, of some of these genes, or so some of these voltages for the pixels. And some of them will sort of sexually reproduce, so you can mix some of the best performing, let's say, individuals and go to the next generation. So you can form a new pool of individuals and you run the process again. So this sort of evolutionary scheme is very common now in femtochemistry, for example, and it can lead to optimize some particular reaction even if you don't know how it works. You just let it run, and it will find the best solution. So what we can do is to use the same scheme to this kind of problem. So even if we don't know the shape of our single photons, we can just run the algorithm, and it will converge to the best, let's say, the shape of our local oscillator will converge to the best, to the shape of a single photon, essentially. So we did this, for example, we can just use it for a dispersed, frequency dispersed single photons. So just a single photon which undergoes some linear dispersion, which means a quadratic modulation of the phase. And you see that, again, we start from a random population, and in the end, this is the number of generations, and this is the efficiency in the homogeneous detection of the single photons. You see that you start from low values, and then after a while, after generation, it improves. And finally, this is a set of the best survivors of all these individuals, and you feel and you see that it converges to a quadratic phase shape, which is exactly what we expect for a phase modulation from dispersion of your system. You can do something more, and for example, once this algorithm has converged, it means that the shape of local oscillator exactly match the shape of your single photon. So what you can do at this point, you can use, for example, some FROG. FROG is an acronym from Frequency Resolved Optical Gating, which is a standard technique for measuring the amplitude and phase distribution of single photon, of ultrashort pulses. And so once you have mapped the shape of the single photon to a local oscillator, you can just measure the local oscillator and completely characterize it, and you have a complete characterization of your single photon. And so, for example, if you don't do anything, this is the FROG trace, and this is the spectrum and, let's say, intensity distribution in time of your pulse. But you can also do something else now. You can shape your single photon, and you can do that by shaping your pump, for example. And one simple way of doing it is by just reducing the spectrum or filtering the spectrum of a pump. Then if this filter is very narrow in the idler channel, then also the signal, your single photon will be, the spectrum of your single photon will be filtered, and then we can wrap the algorithm and we converge to something like this, which is again Well, this is a local oscillator pulse with a narrower spectrum and a longer time duration. And you can also do something more fancy. For example, you can shape your pump so that it has a hole in the spectrum. So also your single photon will be created in this strange spectral shape. And then you can just find the best local oscillator shape and so and reconstruct it. And you really see that our single photons can be generated with these nice shapes. And what it means is that, I mean, it's not two single photons in this and this at these two wavelengths. It's a single photon which is in a superposition of these two states, let's say. So you can immediately see that this can be very interesting. And indeed, this sort of single photon shaping has been already observed, but with very long, let's say, photons which come from, I mean, narrowband photons coming from atomic sources. And in these cases, these photons are so long that you can directly manipulate them by using standard electronics. In our case, what we do is to put together ultra techniques from ultrafast optics and quantum optics to manipulate and characterize the spectral content and of very short quantum states of light. And for example, this can be useful because you can encode now information in the not just in the presence of a single photon in your pulses, but also in the shape of of your single photon. You can encode information in the shape of your single photon. Sorry. For example, there are some proposed scheme for differential phase shift quantum key distribution that are really based on this. So I think I'm finished. So we have actually, this is what we have done. We have some accurate quantum state engineering techniques with some advanced techniques of our analysis. And putting this together, we hope we have some now powerful tools for quantum information processing, communication, and metrology. And of course, this was not done alone. These people have been working on this, essentially mostly Alessandro Tavatta, and for the last results that I showed you, Katiusha Casimiro. And okay, that's all. Thank you very much.